Okay. Anyways, so continuing my journey here and analyzing halachic implications of social media, I figured I'd take one that hit home at Or Chaim. Do any of you daven with us at Or Chaim? Baruch, do you daven with us?
Do you daven with us?
No, like during the week.
No, I just come for Shabbos.
Right, okay. So anyways, a few months ago, there was the whole, right, there was a whole uproar because, and this is the article over here, there had been a bunch of students who were in New York for an NCSY Shabbaton, and Motzei Shabbos, a picture was posted of them with
Conan.
Thank you, with Conan O'Brien, and Gil Student, who is a Gil Student, who writes sort of a popular blog, had criticized the picture because the caption on the picture had been, I met up with these Jewish students because of the Sabbath, they didn't have their phones with them, so I took the picture. And he, you know, so he wrote a whole article about how problematic it is to take pictures on, to think that that's mutter, to think it's permitted to take a picture, a selfie on Shabbos. Now, it turned out it was a mistake, because it wasn't Shabbos, it was just Motzei Shabbos, and they'd been walking back from shul, and therefore they didn't have their phones on them. But this hit home, because the rabbi who was in the picture was Yosef Kurtz, right? And many of the students were Archaim students, who had gone on this Shabbaton, which obviously meant that when the first article came out, right, Grauer got criticism, and then, you know, had to defend the students and issue the clarification. So, in response to this whole thing, after it had been clarified, so Ray Grauer gave a speech here to the students, that one of the things you have to learn from this is that in the modern world, nothing you do is not publicized, and you have to be very careful, because this could really, really affect your reputation for life, because now forever there could be this picture with an article criticizing you for the next God knows how many years, and it was all based on a mistake.
Actually, there are photos on Facebook that I know were taken on Shabbos. I'm like, what was the camera there?
Right. So, Ray's student wrote a response, a second article, this one over here, on whether he was actually required to judge them favorably when he saw the picture, right? It turned out he was wrong. It hadn't been taken on Shabbos, but he wanted to know whether he had been wrong in judging them unfavorably. What?
Probably.
Right, so that was his question. He actually argues that he wasn't. So that's the contention.
Was the article more like criticizing them and putting them down, or was it saying there's a lesson to be learned here? Like,
the first article was why they think this is usher. Okay. Right, then he issued a clarification that they didn't do anything usher, but he then wrote an article on whether he had been wrong to assume that what they had done was on Shabbos. Now, which raises an interesting question, right? Which is, on social media, where you may see people who you know nothing about, right, what is, right, this is the flip side. Right, there's two sides to this equation. One is, you are going to be judged, right, and therefore you have to analyze what are the implications of halachot like Marit Ayin in a world of social media where you're always being watched and you can so easily do something that will be misconstrued. Right, that's a shir for another time. Right, that's on the obligation of people to take social media and the like into account when doing things that might look wrong. Right, how far do you have to go to make sure people don't end up thinking that you're doing something forbidden? Right, then there's the question of what about people who are using social media, right? How far do you have to go to judge people favorably when the simple, right, your first instinct when you see a picture, you see something, is that someone did something wrong? How far do I have to bend over backwards, right? This is always a shaila. But because Ray Gil Student had raised it, I figured it was an interesting point to raise, right? How much are we obligated, as we are now exposed to the whole universe, who people we know nothing about or we know minimal about, how much are we supposed to, do we have to assume what they did is positive, or are we allowed to say, look, I have no reason to assume that this ambiguous situation was positive, and therefore I can function on the assumption that it was negative or it might have been negative. So this is his article, right? This is just to give you the background. He says, last Motzei Shabbos, Jewish social media got excited over a Facebook post by a famous famous comedian. He shared a selfie with some young, frum-looking people and commented that they are Jewish students visiting New York who do not have cameras because of the Sabbath. I assumed that the picture was taken on Shabbos and proceeded to write about whether posing for the picture was permitted, and if not, whether sharing the picture is permitted. I concluded no to both questions. The revised essay is here. Fine. However, late Sunday night, I was informed by Yosef Kurtz that the picture was actually taken after Shabbos was over. I had misunderstood the comment and mistakenly attributed it to the people an act that I considered forbidden. I had assumed that, like most people, they were not aware that posing for a picture is forbidden. This assumption turned out to be wrong. While I did not include any names or details, which I could not have known anyway, their friends and family could have identified them from the picture if they saw it. Should I have done something differently? Right? This was his question. What is the responsibility of not someone who is going to be publicized on social media, but us who see the whole world, not just social media, but social media is probably the worst offender of a place where we offend this the most. Okay, so here's what he says. The Gemara offers a number of stories in which a person deals with someone who appears to have transgressed, judges them favorably, and turns out to be correct. For example, a story is told of a certain man who was sent to the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Zayin Mud Beis. A story is told of a certain man who descended from Upper Galilee, was engaged by an individual in the south for 3 months. On the eve of Yom Kippur, he asked, "Give me my wages that I may go and support my wife and children." "I have no money," answered he. "Give me produce," he demanded. "I have none," he replied. "Give me land." "I have none." "Give me cattle." "I have none." "Give me pillows and bedding." "I have none." So he slung his things behind him and went home with a sorrowful heart. After the festival, his employer took his wages in his hand together with 3 donkeys, one bearing food, another drink, the third various sweets, and went to his house. After they ate and drank, he gave him his wages. He said to him, "When you asked me, 'Give me my wages,' and I answered you, 'I have no money,' of what did you suspect me? I thought, perhaps you came across cheap merchandise and purchased it therewith. And when you asked me, 'Give me cattle,' and I answered, 'I have no cattle,' of what did you suspect me? I thought that they may be hired to others. When you asked me, 'Give me land,' and I told you, 'I have no land,' what did you suspect me? I thought, perhaps it is leased to others. And when I told you, 'I have no produce,' of what did you suspect me? I thought, perhaps they are not tithed. And when I told you, 'I have no pillows or bedding,' of what did you suspect me? I thought, perhaps he had sanctified all his property to heaven. By the temple service, he exclaimed, 'It was so. I vowed away all my property because of my son, Hyrcanus, who would not occupy himself with the Torah. But when I went to met my companions in the south, they absolved me of all my vows. And as for you, just as you judged me favorably, so may God judge you favorably.'" So, right, there's this Gemara where there's a worker, right, an employee, who's been working for this wealthy man for a long time. So he knows that the guy has land and cattle and produce because he's been working with them. And yet, when it comes to his payment, the employer claims he has nothing. But the employee judges him favorably against all odds and turns out to be correct. Right? That despite the appearance of wealth, at that moment, the rich man actually had nothing because he'd been makdish everything. He dedicated everything to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it no longer belonged to him. And the Gemara says, okay, he's praiseworthy for judging people favorably. Now, in the She'iltot, this employee is actually identified as Rabbi Akiva. Right, this is his backstory. He's this tzaddik even before he's a Talmud Chacham. But what comes out from this Gemara? If you just took this Gemara, how far do you have to bend over backwards, would you say, to judge somebody favorably? Right, yeah, very far, right? Meaning against all odds, this guy judged him favorably. It turned out he was right, but he's really stretching it. What? What?
I think if you're going to write an article criticizing, you need
to do
some basic
diligence. Wait, so we're going to get there. But right now, is this Gemara they're telling? Right? Is this Gemara right? Meaning, is the set implication of the Gemara that I have to bend over backwards? Is it right, or is that like Midos Chasidus? That's like a great thing to do, but you're not actually obligated to do that. So he notes that the Gemara here seems to limit to friends. The Mishnah Avot says, "Have a kol adam lekavskos," judge everybody favorably. But when is this actually true? So if you skip down, he says, medieval commentators tend to divide people into two groups. Most agree that we should judge righteous people favorably, but that we do not need to do so for wicked people. This is just common sense, allowing experience to serve as our guide. However, the world consists of more than just these two poles. How do we view average people or strangers whose behavior we do not know? Should we judge them favorably as well? So Rambam explains that if someone righteous does something, you should interpret it as positive if there's even a remote possibility it is good. If someone wicked does something, you should interpret it negatively as a precaution. The Mishnah speaks only of someone you don't know. If he does something that seems equally plausible, is good or bad, it is proper. Amidas Chassidus judge him favorably. It seems that Rambam takes this more general language of everyone in the Mishnah to refer to a stranger, but considers it proper behavior and not obligatory, and then he says the same thing seems to be true in the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. Well, skipping that, yeah.
Does the stranger expand to like non-Jews, or is this...
Probably Jews. We're going to get to actually sources, but this is... I want to sort of set up, use him just to set up, because he sort of grappled with it, you know, in a way, I mean, to come to his own defense, but Rabbeinu Yonah takes a similar approach. In Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah says we judge a righteous person favorably as a matter of truth, common sense. We must judge a wicked person negatively. The mitzvah applies to an average person. If he does something that he could be either good or bad, we should assume it as good. In his commentary to Avos, Rabbeinu Yonah says the Mishnah about judging everyone favorably refers to someone who you don't know. You don't know whether he's righteous, wicked, or average, therefore the mitzvah cannot apply. Even still, as a pious practice, you should judge him favorably. Chafetz Chaim explicitly says there's only a pious practice to judge favorably someone who you don't know. So, superficiality. He says, obviously, I cannot be objective about my own behavior. Based on what I wrote above, it seems that upon seeing a picture of people I don't know in a situation that could be interpreted positively, taken after Shabbos, or negatively, taken on Shabbos, I was not obligated to judge them favorably. However, as a pious or proper practice, I should have judged favorably anyways. While neither a Torah scholar nor a pious man, in these types of matters, we should all act strictly, the world needs stringencies on interpersonal commandments. In truth, it never occurred to me that there was a positive way to judge this case. I jumped to negative conclusion without considering alternatives. I say this not as a justification, but as a confession. Whenever we see something, we need to think carefully before we act. Superficiality is our great sin of our too long didn't read world. A trade that blinds us to our own faults. Like mockery, superficiality prevents us from hearing others and therefore from accepting rebuke. To the people in the picture, I apologize for incorrectly judging you negatively. To my readers, I apologize for misleading you. People who reached out to correct me, I thank you for pointing out my errors. Great, right? But his claim basically is that if you follow the halachic sources, what you come at is as follows. A tzaddik, you're supposed to bend over backwards to judge favorably, even when it seems unlikely what he did is positive, because past experience tells you that he normally does things well. Wicked people is the opposite. Even when they seem to be doing something good, you should question it, because past experience tells you that you should always question their motives. There could be something lurking that you didn't realize. Average people, you're not technically obligated to judge them favorably, but it's probably a good idea. His conclusion, therefore, is in a social world of social media where we are constantly exposed to people we don't know in ambiguous situations, you may not be technically obligated to judge them favorably, but there is a moral obligation, Midas Chassidus, to avoid superficiality, avoid jumping to conclusions, and judge them favorably. And that's sort of his assessment of our responsibility when we're interacting with this unknown world through social media. And what I want to do is just try to go through some of the sources and tease this out and see to the extent which is true, try to get some guidelines for what you should actually do. So some of these sources he already quoted. So number one, right? This is the Mishnah, Yeshub and Prachim, Rasei Lecha, Rav Kenei Lecha, Chaver Vevdan Kol Adam Lekaf Zchud. Make for yourself a teacher, acquire yourself a friend, and judge everyone favorably. Now this may be a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's not clear. The Gemara in 2 tells you, but in the context of testimony, litigants have to stand in court. So the Gemara says, if the judges want to allow both litigants to sit, they can. Ezu asur, what is forbidden? What you aren't allowed to do is treat the litigants differently. Tell them one, stand, one, sit. One, you're allowed to talk as much as you want. One, you have to be quiet. Why? Because it said, judge people with justice. You're not allowed to treat the litigants differently. One stand, one sit, one giving him time to talk, one not. And then the Gemara says, davar acher, have he done it? The Gemara then has a second derivation from this pasuk, that you should judge people favorably. So the primary derivation is in the realm of courts. The secondary derivation is judging people favorably. Now, The Gemara that discusses it, number three, but we already read that in the English, in the article, that's the story of the Galil. And I mentioned already the Shiltot in number four, who claims that this is Rabbi Akiva. But the Gemara in Shvud, if you asked me, is judging people favorably a formal obligation or not? What would you say? Simplest understanding the Gemara in Shvuot. Tamisa Daraisa. It comes from a pasuk. It's a secondary derivation of B'tzedek Tishmar Vitechel. The primary derivation is in court. The secondary derivation is that we judge everyone favorably in non-formal judgment settings. The problem is in number five. The Gemara in Shabbos tells you, Amar Reish Lakish HaChoshed B'ksherim Loke B'gufo. Someone who doubts or suspects good people will be stricken, right? And it will be hurt physically. T'chsev hein lo yaminu li. The proof is from Moshe, who said that the Jewish people will not believe me. And God knew that the Jews would trust Moshe. So Amar lo, and he said to him, "Hein ma'aminim bein ma'aminim." They are believers, the son of believers. V'ata in sof chalamin, you will eventually not believe. Hein ma'aminim, they are believers. Tichsev v'yemen am, they believed Moshe. B'nei ma'aminim v'yemin b'Hashem. Ata in sof chalamin, shnimer lan yo lo emantem. Because of Moshe's lack of faith when striking the rock, he is punishment. And mi'mai delaka, how do we know he's punished? Tichsev v'yom ra'ashem lo, ora v'ina yadcha b'chekecha. Because God says, put your hand in your... cloak by your heart, and it becomes sarat. So you see that he's stricken. Now, from this Gemara, what would you say? Judging people favorably, obligation, midos chasidus. Sort of hard to tell, right? It's telling you you'll be punished, which either means it's midos chasidus, don't do it because you'll be punished, or it's telling you no. Not only is it a mitzvah, but there are real life consequences to it. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah in 6 says, "V'hinei ki tirah adam asher yidaber davar o yaseh ma'aseh." When you see someone doing something, "V'yesh b'tzvot varo ma'aseh l'tzad tova l'tzad zchut," and you could judge it positively or negatively, "im ha'ishu yirei Elokim nitchayevet ladun al dolakav zchut al derech emet." So, if he's known as a righteous person, judge him favorably. Even if it seems more likely that what he did was negative. And if he's an intermediate person, he basically tries to avoid sin, but sometimes he sins like all of us. If it's 50-50, so push it towards good, assume, judge him favorably. But then he says, and this obligation of when something is 50-50 to judge it favorably, that is a biblical obligation. But if it seems negative, you don't have to treat it positively, but you should treat it as a doubtful situation. And if he's usually bad, you know he doesn't have fear of God. So then always think that he's negative. So Rabbi Yonah says a few things. First of all, he thinks that the obligation to judge people favorably is not a mitzvah chasidus, it's d'oraisa. It's a biblical mitzvah. But the second thing he says is that the only time it applies, really, what we're really talking about is the 50-50 case. Because tzaddikim, you're supposed to judge favorably always. Rishayim, you're supposed to judge unfavorably always. It's ambiguous cases. For average people, you have a biblical obligation to push it towards positive. If it seems negative, you have an obligation maybe to view it with skepticism. You don't have to bend over backwards to judge it favorably, because the person's only average and it seems negative. But you should avoid jumping to conclusions. That's basically what he says. The Rambam as well thinks this is a mitzvah d'oraisa, number 7. So Rabbeinu Yonah and the Rambam both seem to say that it's d'oraisa, at least with righteous people or for average people when it's totally ambiguous. But if it's average people and it is ambiguous but leans negative, So then the formal obligation doesn't seem to obligate you. It might be a good thing, as Rabbeinu Yonah says, to give him the benefit of the doubt, but the formal obligation seems not to apply. Now, in order, I think, though, to judge what attitude you really should take in terms of social media, you have to ask a bigger question. Because, look, there is no halachot of social media, right? And judging people favorably is not exactly your classic halachic question. But if you want to develop halachic attitudes to it, then I think the best way of doing it is trying to ask not, okay, how do I formally check off the boxes here, but is asking what is the basis of this whole notion, mitzvah, mitzvah chasidus, and how would it apply? So I asked you, why is it important to judge people favorably? Right? What is even the value of judging people favorably?
You don't know what they're going through.
And okay, but why? What is the benefit of judging them favorably? I mean, I understand why you should, but what does it accomplish? Right?
Here we, by judging them negatively, they've shamed people.
Okay, so let's leave aside for a second if you actually publicly react. Let's just say internally, in your heart, right? What is the value of judging people favorably, right? Obviously, shaming people makes it even worse. But let's leave aside. You're not going to write an article against them. You're just going to judge them. You're going to be judgmental, right? Why, in your heart, should you judge people favorably? I know, you don't know what they're going through. That gives you the petach to judge them favorably. But why do we care?
It builds you as a person.
So one is it might build you ethically. What else?
It affects your worldview. So the more you think negatively of people, the worse you'll just think, period, versus the more you think positively of people, the better you'll think.
Okay. We'll see that in a second. What else? What?
It's how
because
your future interactions with them.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So each of these is reflected. So the Devar HaChinuch says what Baruch says, which is, it's about peace, right? The point of this is, right, he says in number 8, Yasibali yod ben anashim shalom ve'reyu. The point is you want people to get along. And if you always judge people cynically and negatively, then you will react with them negatively. The Rambam, at least for a Talmud Chacham, goes more in the direction of David and says, no. He puts in Hilchot Deot, which is ethical laws, and he says, Chacham, Tamid Chacham lo yitzoeik, v'tzoveach, b'shad divro, k'vibbehemot, v'chayot. A Tamid Chacham doesn't scream and yell like an animal, v'lo yagbia kolo bioter, he doesn't raise his voice too much, eli divro b'nachan and mabriot, etc., etc. And his last one is, done it, kol atam l'kav schut. Meaning, one of the reasons you judge people favorably is because, at least as a supererogatory measure, right, it makes you a better person.
It's like he's never been in yeshiva before. Right.
Okay,
other.
You know what I mean. Yeah. Maril Diskin says what Josh says and says no. He has a totally different perspective. And he says, look, it's based on a different psychology, like this. Sorry, the Mashal also says it's about peace, but the Maril Diskin says as follows. And the Meiri has a similar position as well. When you act in the world in general, right, we have a tendency as human beings, theoretically, we would like to be the best people we can be. Realistically, that's not actually what we care to do. What we care to do is be a little bit better than everybody else, right? Right, that's basically what we want to do, right? And if everyone is mediocre, we feel very good about ourselves if we're mediocre plus. So, Maral Diskin says something very sharp. He says, you know why you should judge people favorably? Because if you judge everybody unfavorably, then that means you think that the average person is a bad person. So what do you then expect of yourself? Either to be as bad as them, or maybe be slightly better, and then you can pat yourself on the back and say, I'm better than everybody else. But if you judge everybody favorably, so then you think that the world is generally a good place. And if you want to keep up with everybody else, you'll push yourself to be better. Right, it's a very clever move by the Maral Diskin. Right, so he says it's not about your interactions with them, and it's not even just building yourself ethically. Is that we live according to the standards that we view the majority of the world to be living by. We don't care to be much better than them, but we do care to be.
But I think it also has an impact on your actual emotional state, even disparaging that point. Where if you have the more positive thoughts you have of people, the more positively you'll think. Period.
Right, so again, I think all three are true, right? I mean, there's three, right? There's three, I think at some level all three of these are true. Now, One of the most fascinating nafkaminas to this question is something which is noted by Daniel Feldman, which is from the Mo'adim Uzmanim in 15, but I'll say it outside. What happens if you know something is negative? You know for sure something is negative, that something negative has happened, right? There's no suffix anywhere, there's no doubt. You know somebody committed a crime.
We watched the photo of it taken.
Not just photo, you know that it was negative, right? However you want to get to the status of vadai, right? So then, is there a value, even when it's like, almost definitely, or definitely something was wrong, is there a value, quote-unquote, to judging people favorably? So, on the level of...
Is there a value to judging them non-favorably?
Or is there a value to judging them non-favorably? Now, on the level of peace, you'd say, look, if something negative happened, so maybe you don't have to judge them favorably, but there's no positive reason why I should go out of my way to judge them unfavorably. But
you have obligations to protect yourself from bad influences. And
more than that. So Rav Sternbach says, but no, that's not true. If you hold it, right, and Ray Feldman connects this to Maral Disk, and he says, if you think judging favorably is about creating a society where we view the world as good, there's two parts to viewing the world as good. One is assuming that most people most of the time are trying to do good, because that pushes us to do good, but it means if something is unambiguously bad, we have to say that it's unambiguously bad, right? Part of maintaining a healthy society where we are motivated to do good things is, one, is to assume society is generally good, and two, is to decry things when they are actually unambiguously negative.
I think it also has
right? They're twins. Yeah.
I think it also has to be in like the realms of like what it has to do with you. Like if you're in the right place to actually rebuke it or mention something about why it's wrong.
Correct. And you always have how you react always depends on this, but what he says is at some point if you start justifying people who are almost definitely negative, that has an equally bad problem, is an equally bad effect on society as judging ambiguous things, negatively, right? So for example, someone's going to listen to this online and get angry at me, but it doesn't matter. I don't care, right? Because I will go on record as saying this. When the Frum community gets up and sings the praises of Rubashkin, right, the message that you send to the community is not we value judging people favorably, it's that we think that all these crimes are not so bad. Right? You shouldn't do that. You can actually do both at the same time. You can judge him favorably and say, look, he's no worse than everybody else in it, and he was just picked on. You can say that he was treated unjustly by the judicial branch, and to be fair, all the legislators thought that was true, and that's why his sentence was commuted. But if you totally whitewash it, then, right? No one says, oh, we've been mar b'shalom. What they say is clearly the Frum community thinks that this is okay. Right? No, you can't do that. Right? At some point, if judging people favorably is about creating a society where people have expectations of themselves, when things are unambiguously negative, you have to, even if you want to put in all the qualifiers that he's no worse than everybody else, you can't whitewash what he did, because then you lead other people to think that's an acceptable standard. You can't do that.
I mean, like, judging favorably could lead to, like, almost society perceiving, like, sanctioning, like...
Exactly. And that's... So Ray Feldman says, once you think the Maral Diskin is right, that the reason we judge people favorably is to set a moral standard in society, then when things are undeniably negative, you can't judge them favorably, or you have to lechumra say, I don't know what happened, I don't know all the details, but if this is what happened, we unambiguously reject that, right? You can qualify it, but you can't use judging favorably as an excuse to whitewash negative activity, because then you've undermined the moral code of society. Now, if you take those three, if you take those three, now I gave you it inside, right? I took these from Olamot, from the next few pages. I copied a few pages from you from Olamot, so you could look at these inside. It's a great website. But also they had these things, the originals. But I think if you take those general values and try to apply them generally to social media, you actually get a few interesting things, right? Which is, if I see things happening on social media, do I, right, and I see things which seem to me negative, what is my obligation to people I don't know? So, if you say it's about shalom, so you might say, look, I don't know if it really applies to someone I'm never going to meet, I'm never going to interact with, right? I mean, maybe it does at the periphery, but, you know, it's someone I don't know, and it's a midas chasidus, so maybe it's a nice thing to judge them favorably, but if I don't, and let's assume I'm not publicly shaming them, I'm just in my heart of hearts saying, you know what, those people are probably bad. Okay, it might not be the nicest thing, but it's not going to lead to a fight, it's not going to lead to whatever. If it's about building your own character traits, there's no denying that you may not be obligated to do it, but if you perpetually follow social media and you follow, you know, the news and all the gossip news, and you always take every ambiguous situation and judge it negatively, on a personal level, that does horrible things to your neshama. If it's about society, it's a bit complicated here. Because things which are, on the one hand, you don't want to be led to the situation where everything which is ambiguous you view negatively, because then it exacerbates the moral distance problem. Right? It's not just that you think your social circle is negative and therefore you have no expectations of yourself. You now have access to the Gantz Olam and you think everybody is bad. That's clearly going to lower your standards for yourself. But on the other hand, let's say the Me Too movement, right? Without judging any individual, right? Being aware that there is in fact, you know, sexual abuse is going on out there somewhere, right? And that the community is decrying it, right? If you then go and say, no, I have to judge everybody favorably and assume that this has never happened, right? To follow the Marl Diskin's approach, what you end up doing is lowering your expectations for yourself by judging favorably, right? Because what you're saying is, nah, this never happens, right? If you say, no, it really does happen, and this is a bad thing, and look, community is getting together to declare this is not good, right? Then there you should say, look, I actually believe that this has happened, and I believe that there, and that it's happened, but it's bad, and I should take the lesson, you know, and make sure that I don't fall into that trap.
Well, also, because that's just like a claim, the complexity there is that judging favorably is a two-way street there. Either you could judge favorably the victim who's making a claim and see, like, oh, she's 100% true, I'm a kabbal, or you judge favorably to the person, to the accused, and you say, oh, 100%
correct. And that's why
it's not like the kids of right. Moshe Shabbos. There's only one way to judge favorably. It's either they're
you're right, you're right. Bad. And I
like, apply to
when
either.
Someone gets accused, you could say, okay, if he did it, that's wrong. I'm against it. But if he didn't do it, then
exactly. And that's why. So that's
there's
why
two,
there's just someone accusing them.
Correct. So that's why I want to sort of like broaden the conversation. Say, you know, if we want to sort of develop a theory of how we should approach these things in social media, it's not enough to just ask the formal halakhic questions. Because then you're right. Okay, well, who are we judging favorably? Him. But I think looking at the meta picture and saying, look, okay, so I won't judge any individual. I won't say he committed a crime or without proof. But to recognize that, look, if a million people claim they were abused, so even if half of them are, you know, it doesn't matter what percentage are telling the truth. Even if it was 10%, right? Let's assume it's more than 10%. But even if it was 10%, that means there's 100,000 people claiming to have been abused. That means that any individual, right? So I may give them the benefit of the doubt. But I should also internalize the power of the fact that the community is censuring the activity, right? I don't have to be unrealistic. I can say there clearly is a lot of people doing this, but it's not acceptable. Like, what I can do is say, right, either it's not happening at all, or it's happening, it's not so bad, right? If I start judging everything favorably, right, I weaken my own moral, I weaken the moral dialogue.
It's like this is using this as a barometer allows more nuance.
Correct. And that's
using this as like your relative criteria allows you to like know where to apply.
Exactly. And that's what I think.
It's about judging people, that's more about judging
society.
If this thing is right or wrong.
Correct. Correct. And that's why but I think that Ray Feldman is right, that it's the flip side of Marl Diskin, right? Is that if you think that judging favorably is about setting standards for society, what we find to be acceptable, so that you will hold yourself to those standards. The twin to it is that when society is saying there's a prevalent activity but it's negative and we're decrying it, the same ethos by judging favorably would force you to recognize that there are bad things happening and frame them. Now, And again, I don't think there are hilchot social media. What I do think is that, you know, there are tools in our toolbox in halacha where we can, right, and looking at sort of the different theories of judging favorably, each of them I think has something to add to how we should approach social media, right? The position that is about shalom, right? So what that would lead you to is, look, your friends, your social circle, people you might interact with, I think you definitely have a higher level obligation, mitzvah or midas chasidus, to judge them favorably, because, yeah, if every time you see a picture by people in your social circle, you judge it negatively, that will affect your social life, clearly. If it's about building your own soul, right? Again, there it may be totally mitzvah chasidus. To the Rambam says that's derech tamidei chachamim. Fine. You're not obligated to be a perfect person. But it's clearly a good thing, right? If you constantly are viewing the whole world you don't know, but you're viewing them negatively for no apparent reason, it gnaws at your soul, right? That's a bad thing. On the other hand, the Maral Diskin's point that it's more than it just gnaws at your soul. It sets the standards that you want to live up to, right? It's bad enough if we think all of our friends are bad. If we think the whole world is bad, we hold ourselves to the worst standards. But on the other hand, social media and the like gives us access to the whole world and sometimes gives us access to negative things we wouldn't have had access to. And there, if we don't actively decry the evil, even without pinning it on a specific person, but if we don't internalize that society is criticizing a certain activity, right, then recognizing its prevalence without criticizing it is as damaging to our soul and our own activity, right?
So if I'm within this paradigm, I have a scenario that it's, I don't know, it's kind of like stuck between a hard and a rock place.
Yeah.
I have a very close friend who writes like a lengthy testimonial talking about like horrible abuse suffered at the hands of like an elementary school rabbi. By judging him favorably, assuming his story to be correct, and all of a sudden it's like,
correct.
Evil rabbi, listen, like, and I just eat a cheeseburger every now and then. I'm a tzaddik now. You
know? Correct. Right. So here, right. So obviously there are cases, and that's the tricky thing. You're right. At some point is when you have good people who were held to a high moral standard, turns out they were terrible, right? That weakens our own resolve. Right? That weakens our own resolve. You're right. And then you've got to, right? And that's why I think the Gemara specifically says that there's a category called Mefarsimin and Chanifin, right? Hypocrites are the worst. Right? We have to publicize hypocrisy because hypocrisy is what weakens our resolve the most. Right? It's good people, it's people who are ostensibly really good doing really terrible things. Right? And that's why, yeah, Mefarsim
so
Chanifin.
It would be proportional. So if it actually were to come out as true, we'd have to demonize that.
Correct. And that's what the Gemara actually says.
15th degree.
Correct. And that's actually what the Gemara says. And that was something we discussed a few weeks ago, right? Is that's really what's behind the whole Pashkevilin thing, right? Is that people
that's
who were, you know, those signs they put in the Haredi world, right?
Oh,
but
yeah, okay.
We may not agree with everyone they do it, but yeah, right? The more someone held himself up on a pedestal, the more you have to decry, right?
In theory, and their impetus is correct.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I think is fascinating with Maral Diskin, is Maral Diskin's very, very prescient interpretation of judging favorably puts in perspective that it's not about judging favorably. It's about creating a moral dialogue in society that pushes us all to be the best. Now, sometimes that means not assuming that everyone's evil, because that lowers our expectations. But sometimes, when things are unambiguously evil, it means, well, far as it is, even we have to call it hypocrisy, because if we don't, right, that is...
bad for ourselves.
Exactly. And that's really, I think... And I, look, judging favorably is not a classic halachic topic. But I think, despite that, or maybe even because of that, the discussions that come up within it give us sort of guidelines of how to develop an ethos about it. Now, I gave you just in 13 that some of the nafkaminas, so the Yismach Moshe adds something else, right? That judging favorably minimizes Chil Hashem, which is true, right? Meaning the more less we think bad things are happening, minimize Chil Hashem, but it's not always true. And that's what you note, is that sometimes, right, hypocrisy, right? Once hypocrisy is exposed, the biggest Chil Hashem you can do is to cover it up. Right? At some point, right? Again, all these things cut both ways, and that's really the complexity of it. Now,
does that apply like some of like the accusations? Like, I'm not enough in the sugya that there's been like movements in like very, very from communities to just like hide any and all dirty laundry.
Correct, and that's the worst, right? That is the worst, right?
Yeah.
You know, Ron Salvechik notes it's very nice to say it's a chil Hashem to publicize it. It's a bit, but the Gemara says mafarsman hachanifin mipnei chil Hashem. It's the hypocrites themselves. Hypocrisy is itself Chil Hashem. It's not the exposure later. They, right, don't not expose hypocrisy because of Chil Hashem. It's the hypocrisy which is Chil Hashem.
Like if someone goes to a school.
Every ex-publishing a new big bestseller, like, you know, exposing hypocrisy, alleged hypocrisy, and we would be better not to have the dirty laundry approach. And
for sure. Now, now there are many nafkaminas that people bring to these different reasons. So, for example, can you be mochel? Can you let someone judge you unfavorably? Right, so theoretically, if it's about shalom, you could, right? You say, look, I don't care, you know, I don't care, judge me. But if it's about building your own character or setting your own standards, it doesn't matter. It's not about them, it's about you, right? It's about, right, no one, b'machshava b'maaseh, right? Do you violate judging unfavorably even in your heart or only if you actually do something about it? Does it apply to people who are already dead? Right, so if it's about shalom, presumably it doesn't. But if it's about building our society, it does matter, right? Judging what was the last generation like does influence the way what we expect of ourselves. Now there is, of course, the middle position, which this is sort of the famous vort, right? Have a dan et kol ha'adam lekafzchot, right? Judge the entire person favorably. But right, the vort always said about it is judging favorably doesn't mean you have to deny that someone did something wrong. It means that you can admit they did something wrong, but judge it in perspective and say, look, I don't know what he went through, but that's a way of squaring the circle, saying, look, on the one hand I can decry negative activity, but on the other hand,
without the person,
without pinning it on the person, I can say, look, what you did is wrong. I'm not saying you're a bad person, right? I don't know what you went through, but I can't say the activity is good, right? There are ways of saying,
like, after every shooting there's always an article saying the person had a mental illness.
Exactly, right? Meaning there are ways that, right, and there's ways of sort of okay, let's see. Okay, let me see. Let's just skip around a bit over here. Okay, so, yeah, let's do one more thing here, right? So, but basically what I think you get, right, is we've seen, look, it's a machlokes. Is it de'araisa? Is it de'rabanan? Is it based on shalom or reyus or your personal building or about building a society, right? And we can sort of mix and match. And again, I'm not sort of, you know, poskening anything, but raising the type of questions I think need to be asked. But since we mentioned the Me Too movement, I came across this tshuva, the last page. It's a tshuva of sorts, which actually seems to put an interesting spin on that. And this was his question. Is, diyun lekav chov letoelet? Are you allowed to judge people unfavorably if by judging unfavorably it'll be beneficial to society, right? So most of the time what I said is what we're really asking is we're watching people, we're seeing pictures online, how are we treating it? And then whether it be for ethical perspectives or for our own moral character, it's better for us whenever possible to judge things favorably. It does us well, it creates shalom, it builds our moral character, it gives us things to strive for, etc. Is it a mitzvah? Is it mitzvah chasidus? We try to be good people, not just people who check off the chiyuv and maybe are not obligated to judge every picture favorably, but generally it's a good thing. But the Me Too thing, as I mentioned, really raises the question, but what if judging everybody favorably would lead to us exonerating or condoning, right, would lead to the perception that we condone bad things, right? Meaning, and that's what happens, right? At some point, if every single time someone claims that something bad happened, we say, no, it didn't happen, judge favorably, right? The message that comes across is we condone the bad activity. Because everyone knows that what'll happen, because at some point people feel it's hush hush, wink wink, right? We're not saying it's okay. We're saying he probably didn't do it. But if every single person is accused of something, you say he didn't do it, everyone knows they can just do it, and everyone will just say he probably didn't do it either, right? At some point, you can't, it goes, right, ad hasof, right? That's just reality.
It's an impossible situation to judge favor. Because it's always, the accuser gets accused.
I mean, yes, but
you have, if you're, as soon, the second you take a stand, you judge one person favorably, one person.
In a harami. But even without names, right? Even without names, right? That's the Me Too movement. It's not a name thing. You're not, there's no one, let's say there's no one being accused specifically, right? So now, no one in particular is going to be hurt, right? It's just, but if we were to collectively judge all those theoretical perpetrators favorably, right, then everyone knows they can get away with everything.
The probability is that 90% of those women weren't, and they're just jumping in on the fact.
Well, nobody knows. Nobody knows.
Getting into the actual numbers.
But that's my point. It's a mentality question. But that's what it's a mentality question, right? This is my question. It's the mentality question. So this tshuva, I think, actually is fascinating to sort of put this in a light. Again, I'm not posking anything. I'm just sort of raising questions. I haven't worked through it. I use you to sort of work to think through the issues a bit. But this, I found this fascinating. So this is from the Sefer Reacha Kamocha. And he has this piece on Dion Lekavchov Litoelet. So he says, "Hamitzvah ladun chaveru lekav zchud. He mitzvah sheben adam lechaveru. Right, judging people favorably is an interpersonal mitzvah. Mitzvah sheben adam lechaveru naktin anshein hutru l'toelet. In general, by interpersonal mitzvot, the rule is that if they're for a beneficial purpose, we're allowed to waive them. Glonezro b'derech hashchata v'kalkul midot raot. Because it's only asur in a destructive manner. V'lo kasher amatarahu l'tikun v'toelet. Not if it's meant for good things. Chen kad gav agon rav Chan Wasserman." That all interpersonal crimes are only when they're negative. What's his example? So he gives a few examples. So, for example, chovel. Right, you're not allowed to hurt somebody. But what if you're a surgeon? You're causing them to bleed. So it's mutter. And the Rambam's nusach is chavala, right? Damaging, injuring someone is only asur derech nitzayon, as part of a fight. Or the Chavetz Chaim says it by Lashon Hara, right? That Lashon Hara is mutter litoelet. Right? If it's beneficial. So from here, Elchanan Wasserman develops a theory that interpersonal mitzvot are only, or averot, are only usher when they're meant to hurt. But when they're not meant to hurt, they're meant to do good, then they are permitted. That's his theory. So now he wants to ask, what about judging people favorably? So he skipped to bet. He says, you have to be very careful. Because there's two types of good that could come out of hurting. Sometimes when we talk about toelet, we mean it's good for the person I'm theoretically hurting. And sometimes we mean it's good to hurt this person for the sake of everybody else. Right? So for example, a surgeon. Right? When we say that it's mutter for someone to perform surgery because it's chavala litzorech, what we're saying is that the person getting the surgery doesn't view this as being injured. He views it as beneficial surgery. It's for his own good. Sometimes what we mean is not for his good, but for everybody else. Right? So, lashon hara litoelet isn't for the good of the person you're talking badly about. It's you're telling somebody, hey, he is a, right, at his store, he deceptively overcharges. You're hurting the store owner. You're doing it to protect others, right? There are two different types of toaliot out there, right? Benefit for the person being quote-unquote hurt, which is obviously permitted. And then, the more complicated case is hurting someone to help other people. V'ktara bishvilo o biglalo. Right? He said, if you want to summarize it, is it toelet for him or because of him? Ulam, ein heter ladun klakav chova letzorach acher. Kigon letzorach adam shedan lakav chov kasher ein hu alulina zeg me adam hu dan. Kemen chaz zenech shav shu dan lakav chov mitoch midot raot b'derach hashchata v'kulkul v'lo zu atoel shu atorai tira b'nfot shu ben adam lachave ro. So he says, it wouldn't make sense to judge somebody unfavorably for the sake of others, right? Meaning there's a person who, what he did may have been innocuous, but I'm going to pretend what he did was negative to make a point to the rest of the world. That's unfair. And it's just unfair, right? You can't say, look, he may not have committed a crime, but I'm going to assume he committed a crime to make a point to the rest of the world that this is a bad thing to do, right? That seems unfair. V'od, and he said, furthermore, sheyesh kama dargot shel diyun l'kav zchud. There are many levels of judging favorably. Lachshov sheploni lo asa klal ma'ase zeh. Right? One level is to say he never did anything wrong. Lachshov shema'ase zeh kilu tov, where it was good. Two, safek imploni asa ma'ase zeh safek lo asa. The second is to have doubt whether he did it. Gimel, vadai sheploni ma'ase zeh. Sometimes you don't deny that he did it. Ulam asu b'shogeg, but you judge him favorably by lowering the level of the crime. You say, you know, maybe he did it, but maybe it was an accident. Or there were extenuating circumstances. So it was wrong, but I understand where he's coming from. Said, if you do need to judge people unfavorably for benefit, there's still different levels at which you could do it. Klomar, im nasiget etoelat ayidei diyun kefi od bet shenachshov sharak safeku and ploni asad amase inetar lachshov kefi o gimel shavadayu asar. Right? Sometimes you can say, look, I can accomplish the same societal goal by sufficing with doubt. Sometimes I can't. If I could accomplish the same societal goal by saying maybe he did it accidentally, I can't assume he did it on purpose. If necessary, I can think he did it. Then he goes on and proves that he thinks this is fine. And then just to skip all the way to the Vav, after he provides proof, just to wrap it up, you can read the proofs inside if you want. He says in Vav, Al Pia Amor, once I prove Nireshe Mechanech Ram Mashkiach Horev Chulei, Rashaim Lefamim Ladun Lekov Chola Misafik Latoel Kedilach Chorla Chanech Lachria. Sometimes a parent, a teacher, has to judge someone unfavorably, because if you always judge your kids favorably, right, you never look into whether they're doing something wrong. Right? If a teacher always assumes that no one's doing something wrong, you never bother even looking into it. And therefore, what he concludes, but I think his general approach is helpful, is to say, look, we don't, even if we've established that sometimes it's beneficial to judge people unfavorably for the sake of society or whatever, or, so first of all, we can't just use people as karbanot. We can't say, look, I don't know whether what you did is wrong, but I'm going to offer you up on the altar to protect society. That's not fair. On the other hand, right, sometimes it's clear people did things wrong and we need to either investigate or make it clear that we judge this, right, that we censor this, we censure rather, we think this is wrong, but there are different ways we could do it, right? Meaning you can, so take the Me Too movement, right? You can say, look, I won't judge anybody in particular because then I'm not sacrificing any individual for society. I'm saying there is a problem in society and I'm going to admit that for the sake of helping fix it. On the other hand, if you're turned to an individual, you could say, look, I don't know whether he did it, or you're allowed to say, look, what he did was wrong, but he did it in the 70s, and the standards they had in the 70s were wrong, and now we're looking back. That doesn't mean that he's absolutely evil, even if he's wrong, right? There are middle ways of doing it, right? You can say, look, what he did is totally unacceptable, but he's not the worst person to ever live, because maybe he didn't fully internalize that, right? Sometimes he did fully internalize it. It depends on the situation. But what all these things, I think, point to is that when we live in this ever more connected world, we have a moral obligation to set our own moral compass in such a way that we don't become overly cynical about the world, that we don't increase fighting by constantly judging unfavorably, but also that we're sensitive to the fact that the way we judge things and the way we... It's not always positive to judge things favorably, because if we overjudge things favorably and we don't allow censure to happen, then we, right? If judging favorably is about making people think society is good so that we'll push ourselves to be our best, if we always judge bad things favorably, then we do the opposite. We set the standard so low and we make it clear that crimes are legitimate. Our goal is somewhere in the middle, is to minimize the fallout from judgably unfavorably while recognizing the negative consequences of bending over backwards too much to justify evil. Our goal is, as he said, to find a kalakal, to somehow in the middle balance them so that we're not hurting individuals without proof, but that we're also not judging favorably when it's not justified and thereby justifying crimes. And finding that balance to sort of fulfill all the values that are discussed in the sugya is really a challenge that has always existed, but has been exacerbated by social media, and it's something I think we have to grapple with. But if we look through the sources, at least it will give us some guidance and sort of some way of thinking about it. Even if not clear-cut answers, it does give us a direction to think about, which is at least something valuable. Okay, Shkoyach, hopefully this was interesting. It's helped me clarify my thoughts a bit, and hopefully we'll, maybe one day we'll have more concrete answers, but probably not.